It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. Chucky's coming to you live on 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980 here in the DMV. Going to check in right now on the BetQL guest hotline with Mo Egger. He's an afternoon host on ESPN 1530 in Cincinnati, where, of course, the Bengals have started off 0-2. What's the atmosphere there in Cincy? Are you guys used to these slow starts?
Well, we are. Third straight year, they're 0-2. Second straight year, they're 0-2 going into a home game on Monday Night Football. And so there's a familiarity here that I think has lended itself to, I think, a tiny bit of confidence coming into this game. First of all, the Bengals are at home. They are favored. They're getting T. Higgins back for the game tonight. So offensively, they'll be as whole as they have been. And let's face it, this is a place they have been before. They recovered last year from the 0-2 start to at least be in the thick of things when Joe Burrow got hurt. 2 years ago, they were 0-2 and ended up making the AFC Championship game. And so I think there's a confidence, but I also think there's a sense that, you know what, if you keep doing this, if you keep getting close to the fire, at some point you're going to get burned. And If the idea is to start 0-2 every single year, at some point that 0-2 is going to turn into 0-3.
Mo, how is Joe Burrow handling being in the longest losing stretch of his career? No wins in his past four starts, longest stretch in his career at any level. So, I mean, it has to be in the back of his brain at some point, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, I think more than anything in the back of his brain and in the first game of the season against the Patriots was that it wasn't 100%. By his own sort of admission, and when I say sort of, Joe, over the course of training camp, never said that he's 100%. You know, he talked about making progress and being where he needs to be at that point. And if you watched his performance against the Patriots, it was very un-Burrow-like. It wasn't that he played poorly, although he did. It was the unwillingness to throw the ball downfield. 16 of his first 20 passes didn't go more than 5 yards beyond the line of scrimmage. He just didn't look comfortable. I thought last week he took a step in the right direction. He wasn't flawless by any stretch, but he looked more like the Joe that we have kind of come to used to here. And so, you know, how's he handling the losing streak? I think he's more concerned with just getting better, getting healthier, getting T. Higgins back, and feeling more comfortable doing the things that we have associated him with. He did more of those things against Kansas City. We'll see if he's willing to do more of those things tonight.
Is Higgins going to be on some sort of pitch count coming back from the hamstring, or is he full go, full bore, 100%?
I'm going to guess there's some sort of plan to ease him back into things. But I'll say this about T. Higgins. This is a guy who wants to play. You know, for those who wondered, well, is you know, you even had people who thought maybe he was faking the hamstring injury because the team franchise tagged him. That's not what this dude does. I mean, this is a guy who last year in a game against Kansas City, with the season hanging in the balance, was willing himself back onto the field despite dealing with a hamstring issue. And so I think T is approaching the game thinking, I'm going to play every conceivable offensive snap. But I do think the coaches are going to try to execute some sort of plan for him where he, you know, he's not playing a small amount of snaps, but he's not exactly, you know, going through his entire workload. But it's going to be interesting. Look, this hamstring issue has been one that's been recurring now for a while. This is why they didn't sign him to a long-term contract. He is always dealing with hamstring issues. And so, you know, it's one thing to go into the game thinking T's going to play 40 snaps, or T's going to play every offensive snap he can. I'm really curious physically, how does he hold up? Does this become an issue tonight? Does it turn into something that we're talking about long-term? Does it turn into something that we're talking about often during the course of the season?
Mo, I know Ja'Marr Chase was a big story, obviously, in training camp because of the contract issue, and started off a little slow in the first couple of weeks. But I got to think that Zach Taylor and Dan Pitcher, your OC, looked at T. tape of what the Giants did, and they targeted Neighbors 18 times. Okay, 18 times. Look, the secondary for the Commanders isn't very good. The defense as a whole isn't very good. And I got to think that Zach Taylor is going to say, Joe and Jamar, this is your game. If they're smart, they would target Jamar 12 to 14 times because he could do some damage that way.
A little bit of a callback to the exact same game last year. 0-2 start, game 3, Monday Night Football, and Jamar Chase got targeted 13 times. Mm-hmm. He was the best player on the field. And it wasn't, you know, Jamar's just going to run streak routes. I mean, he was catching passes in every conceivable way. I have to think that's a huge part of what they want to do. And look, I mean, it's quite simple. When Jamar is playing without T, Jamar gets double teamed. When Jamar is playing and he's got T opposite him, he's not getting double teamed. And I think the other thing is, if you paid attention to what the Bengals did last week against Kansas City, they tapped into suddenly this wealth of tight ends they have. And so they should be difficult to defend. And if you're difficult to defend, then your best offensive player, and I think most of us would agree that's Jamar, should have an easier time. And against this Washington defense, you've got to think he's got a chance to have a very big game. And I think relative to how they've used him over the first couple of weeks, you're going to see a steadier dose of passes aimed toward Jamar. I don't know that they're all going to be deep downfield, but yes, you're right. I would be surprised if we come out of this game wondering where the targets were for Jamar Chase.
What are you guys seeing on tape, or what are the coaches saying about defending Jaden?
You got to keep him from beating you on the ground. I mean, look, this is a defense that we knew coming into the season was going to be bad against the run. We knew that. Well, it's been bad against the run, and it's probably less equipped to be better against the run because they had two defensive tackles come out of last week's game with injuries. One of them is not going to play, Sheldon Rankins. The other, they're going to make a game-time decision, DJ Hill. That's already a deficiency. So, you know, the coaches will say all the requisite things about Jaden Daniels throwing, but if you're going to beat the Bengals and if you're going to take advantage of a defensive weakness, it's stopping the run. But the secondary has been retooled, and, you know, they've got Dax Hill, a safety playing corner, Von Bell, they're starting, one of their two starting safeties, probably isn't going to play tonight. And I think any team, certainly early in the season, is being neglectful of what they need to do if they don't try to throw the ball downfield and test what the Bengals have done in the secondary. But if any team's going to come here and win, New England did this and did it to almost perfection. You're going to beat them at the point of attack. You're going to make them miss tackles. You're going to expose a weakness up. I mean, the Bengals this week brought in Lawrence Guy, who's like my age, played 14 years in the NFL off the street, and I think he's going to get significant snaps tonight. So I think if Washington wins or keeps this close at least, it's going to be because they're the third consecutive team to really run it well against them.
That's our opportunity.
Hey, Mo, I wanted to ask you your opinion and like the rest of the Cincinnati opinion or media opinion about the end of the Chiefs game and how and I watched pretty much every play. And on the 4th and 16 with 40 seconds to go, give or take a few, they rush three guys. And Mahomes is able to bounce out and has a little bit more time to throw it downfield as opposed to running, you know, rushing four or five guys and making him get rid of the ball quicker. Now, the pass interference I thought was a good call on your rookie. I think his name was Anthony. I can't remember his first name. But it was a good call. And obviously it set up the Butker field goal. But your thoughts on how they played that, dropping eight guys back as opposed to making Mahomes throw the ball a little quicker?
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said. And what I'll add to it is, Trey Hendrickson, their edge rusher, was dominant in that game.
Yeah, he was.
I mean, he got their starting left tackle benched. All they could do across the course of the afternoon was basically put him in a headlock to stop him. And so here's what I didn't understand. If you're only going to rush three, you're basically allowing the Kansas City Chiefs to triple-team a guy who had been the best player on the field. That doesn't make any sense. Why wouldn't you put Trey in a position where you could tell him, go end the game for us? Which the way to do that is by having him encounter as few blockers as possible. So rushing three meant three dudes were going to triple-team Trey Hendrickson, which is exactly what happened. That's what didn't make any sense. Everything else I couldn't agree more. You're going to give Patrick Mahomes time to do exactly what he did. The pass interference call was a good call. You also had a guy, Dijon Anthony, who's a seventh-round pick.
Mm-hmm.
That was his eighth NFL snap.
Right.
And so it's rushing three, but it's also the personnel they didn't have on the field. They didn't have Sam Hubbard on the field, probably their second-best defensive lineman. They didn't have Mike Hilton on the field. Their terrific slot corner, who's certainly got better ball skills at this stage of his career than Dijon Anthony. I mean, there were so many things just in that play to second guess and wonder about. And you could yell and scream that that's not a flag that should have been thrown there. Look, it was early contact.
Yeah,
That's pass interference. But even if you want to say it was a 50-50 call, I think because of how the Bengals played in the fourth quarter, twice having the ball with the lead and a chance to extend the lead, or in the second chance in the game, and then with how they chose to play that individual snap, they put themselves in a position to be, if you think they were screwed by the officials, and I do not, they put themselves in a position to be screwed by the officials.
Mm. Good point.
So what's your prediction tonight? Give me a score.
I think the spread's a bit hefty. I'll be honest with you. 7.5 points for a team that's very good stopping the run. So I think we get a game. I think Cincinnati wins. I do think they're the better team. I'll take Joe Burrow against the Washington defense that's dead last in DVOA. But I think just enough of what the Commanders can do on the ground, and I think so little of what the Bengals can do stopping the run, that I think we get a game in the fourth quarter. And if we do, I think you're gonna get a real sense of apprehension from the fans at Paycor Stadium, given the fact that this team cannot afford to go 0-3, but I do think the Bengals will pull it out. I'll say something like 24-20, somewhere in that ballpark.
I like it, though. Some respect.
That's for, a cover. Yeah. Cover for
some
the Commanders,
Some respect for
too.
My Commanders.
That is a like cover. It. That's a cover.
The bar is low here, my friend.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mo.
Thanks a lot, Mo.
I live in Cincinnati. I know all about the bar being low.
Yeah.
Good point.
Thank you, buddy.
Afternoon host on ESPN 1530 in Cincinnati. Coming up at 9 o'clock, Scott Abraham joins us.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket. Follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports director and anchor for ABC 7 here in D.C.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket. Follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.